From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Illinois is undergoing some significant changes in the way it handles criminal justice. Thanks to decisions taken at both the state level and in courthouses across Illinois, state prisons are incarcerating fewer people than they have in decades. And more changes are on the way. Lately, you might have heard about some of them relating to something called the SAFETY Act. That's an acronym for Safety, Accountability, Fairness, and Equity Today, SAFETY. The SAFETY Act was signed into law in 2021 by Governor J.B. Pritzker, and backers say it's aimed at ending systemic racism in the criminal justice system. Critics of the law, however, have called it pro-criminal and anti-police. Although the safety bill became law last year, it's gained attention in recent weeks after a graphic claiming to explain the law went viral online, and it's also featured into campaign mailings made to look like newspapers that were sent out across the state. Meanwhile, candidates for office are expressing their views on the SAFETY Act. Here's the Republican candidate for governor, Darren Bailey, making claims about one particularly controversial aspect of the law, the end of cash bail.
Talk about how the property taxes are going to increase drastically when this goes in effect, because that money that's coming in right now for cash bail, that supports the system. The people are working, processing these criminals. And without this cash bail, they're either going to be let go or property taxes are going to have to increase.
Meanwhile, Governor J.B. Pritzker is defending the law.
The SAFETY Act is designed to keep murderers and domestic abusers, violent criminals in jail. And to address that, the problem of the current system, which allows those people, murderers, domestic abusers, and so on, to buy their way out of jail by just paying bail.
The conflicting information has prompted a lot of confusion. So today on the 21st Show, we are aiming to set the record straight, to talk about what's true and what's false in discussions of the law, and to talk with those who will be working with the law in courtrooms across Illinois. Joining us is Jay Hanley, the Winnebago County State's Attorney. He recently expressed his concerns about the SAFETY Act in an op-ed in the Rockford Register-Star. State's Attorney Hanley, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
Also with us is Sharon Mitchell, the Chief Public Defender for Cook County. Defender Mitchell, welcome to the 21st Show, and thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me as well.
And finally, Garian Gatewood is with us, the Executive Director of the Illinois Justice Project, which works on criminal justice reform issues in order to decrease prison recidivism, among many other projects. Mr. Gatewood, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me again, Brian. It's always a pleasure.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, if you have seen some of these either ads or mailers or maybe these viral graphics that have been circulating on Facebook and other social media sites, we want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. What are your questions about what the SAFETY Act does? Let us know. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. So, Garian Gatewood, I want to begin with you, and maybe we can just go briefly over what is actually in the SAFETY Act.
Sure. So the SAFETY Act is a massive bill. As you've seen, it's a nearly 800-page bill that covers areas in policing reform, areas in sentencing reform, and areas around the Pretrial Fairness Act and the elimination of cash bond. The SAFETY Act was a pretty inclusive process that had over 30 hours of subject matter hearings and many, many, many working groups that included folks from, law enforcement, state's attorneys, public defenders, the advocacy community. A lot of that work was also done during a process of, you've seen a couple of the trailer bills around the SAFETY Act as well. So we had a large, robust process going on through that process too. But a lot of these things were pieces of legislation that groups and people had been working on for years. And this was an opportunity to pull a lot of these together. You've seen some improvements to the SAFETY Act in conjunction with partnership folks who were interested in it. And we'll see how some of these pieces work going forward. We know some of the law enforcement entities are working on implementation of portions around body cams, around use of force, around police misconduct. So we've seen some of that work start to come up. A lot of those things, in particular, the body cam resources don't go into full effect until 2025. So it gives law enforcement a lot of time to get those items together. I know that was a part of one of the trailer bills that folks worked on that law enforcement wanted to see happen, that pushed back on that date. And, you know, the main piece that we're here to talk about is the elimination of cash bail, which was something that the Coalition to End Money Bond worked on for multiple years with members in the General Assembly and held hundreds of town halls across the state to help educate folks around the outcomes. And, you know, one piece I think that will be important about this, and I know Sharon will get into more details on it, is, you know, we often hear conversations about, you know, victims' voices and thinking about victims. And I think we are very intentional about that in the Safety Act by bringing victims of domestic violence and crime survivors and those advocacy communities to the table to help draft it, to make sure we try to create public safety for all. So those are some of the things that are covered. It's a pretty massive bill. Luckily, on our website, on the Illinois Justice Project's website, we have a breakdown of the Safety Act in its original form, and we'll work on updating it for some of the changes that have happened, but you can get a pretty good download on it from the Illinois Justice Project's website.
All right, Sharon Mitchell, I want to bring you into the conversation now because you were an activist in criminal justice before you became the chief defender in Cook County. What is your perspective on the Safety Act?
Well, you know, I think that most people can agree that using money to make determinations about whether someone should be in jail or not in jail is a broken model. And you have folks on, I think, both sides of the argument that can agree that that use of money has created some really unfortunate outcomes. On one hand, I've heard folks say that, listen, using money to make determinations about someone getting out of jail can cause people who maybe shouldn't be out to get out. On the other hand, I've heard arguments where people say that, listen, using money to make determinations about who should be in means that lots and lots of poor people stay in jail. So I think the reality of the situation is that the bond portion of the Safety Act is an extremely strong step forward. You know, there's no coincidence that I think the federal system operates mainly without money. There have been states like New Jersey that have ended their use of cash bond. And I think it'll be up for us to really think about going forward and continuing to make adjustments to the bill, being open to work out kinks. There's a reason why the bill was passed in 2021, but doesn't go into effect till 2023. It was because for this process to go, to kind of figure out what works and what doesn't work. And that's kind of what New Jersey did. And this is a bill that's very similar to what New Jersey did. There are a few differences, there are a few similarities. And I think it's just really, really important to kind of think through and think about what misconceptions we've heard about the bill and really understand that those misconceptions come right as we're moving into an electoral process, and that there are folks that I think believe that there is some political value in kind of spreading misinformation about the law. There are certainly people can have back and forth about certain details, but the fact of the matter is that a large segment of the population are hearing misinformation and believing that misinformation for political gain.
All right, let me just take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a series of criminal justice changes in Illinois law that have been it was signed into law last year by Governor J.B. Pritzker. The most notable one, or the one that's been most discussed lately, is the end of the money bond system, the end of having to pay cash bail in order to get out of jail when someone has been accused of a crime but not yet convicted of a crime. That doesn't take effect until, as we just heard, January of 2023. There's been a lot of political discussion as well as viral memes about this law. So we're aiming to cut through some of that in our conversation today. We've just been hearing from Sharon Mitchell, who's the chief public defender in Cook County, also Garian Gatewood, executive director of the Illinois Justice Project. And I want to now bring in Jay Hanley, the Winnebago County State's Attorney. You recently had an op-ed, an essay, an opinion piece published in the Rockford Register Star. The headline on that said, "More than half of Winnebago County Jail to walk outdoor January 1st. So, Mr. Hanley, can you just talk about what are some of your concerns with the Safety Act?
Sure. And Brian, I would just offer to clear up some of the misconceptions. I think I've got a pretty tight 30 seconds as to why the chart that's been going around is not correct. And also the idea that there's no such thing as non-detainable offense is also incorrect. But to answer your question specifically, I think the law eliminates prosecutorial and judicial discretion when determining which defendant should be released back into the community, or at least it diminishes that discretion to a level that I think is problematic. I appreciate Attorney Mitchell mentioning the New Jersey law, because what I have been advocating, along with really most of the state's attorneys in Illinois, is that we follow New Jersey's, their model. I don't think it's fair to say that ours is similar. It's not similar enough. What New Jersey did was, number one, they passed it by referendum. Number two, they took quite a bit of time in implementing it. And three, it gives prosecutors discretion to seek detention on any case. And it's based upon two factors, whether the defendant is a danger to the community or an individual person, or if they're a flight risk. In other words, they're not going to appear in court. And so it's the net of offenses in which someone can be detained is much wider than the current Illinois law. In addition, the standards are kind of what are traditionally used in criminal law, not what the Safety Act currently has, which is clear and convincing. And there's a lot of confusing language. In some cases, it's not necessarily if you're a danger to the community, but rather to a specific identifiable person. I understand and hope some of the things will be fixed. But I think if you had to, my number one complaint is that it severely diminishes prosecutorial and judicial discretion in those pretrial detention decisions. What I am not advocating for, Brian, and I think people have confused this, is that I'm not advocating for the return of cash bail. And that's for a few reasons. One, I'm a former federal prosecutor, so I operated without cash bail for quite some time. And two, I also understand the political environment here in Illinois. Cash bail is not coming back. However, I think we can follow the New Jersey model almost an exact cut and paste. In addition, Brian, if you want me to, I can talk about some of the things that have happened in New Jersey and why we would be well served.
Let's come back to that. And let me ask maybe Garian Gatewood with the Illinois Justice Project. Do you want to respond to this idea that judges and prosecutors are losing discretion? Is that by design, or go take it where you will?
Yeah, well, absolutely. So we actually believe, and folks who've worked on it, is it actually increases judicial discretion. Increases judicial discretion because it gives judges the opportunity to decide not just based on wealth, but which persons meet the dangerousness standard to hold them in. So we actually think we've done a pretty good job of increasing judicial capacity and judicial discretion to try to increase public safety. I mean, we live in a system now where a person who has abused their wife may be able to pay bond and leave out. And there's not much discretion there in that system now. So now we're trying to create a system that has more discretion, judicial discretion, for folks who are deemed a true threat to public safety, not just based on their wealth.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Gary. And I just want to put a finer point on that. You know, if I'm arrested and I'm given a cash bond, although the judge sets that bond, that's where the judge's discretion ends, right? It's basically up to me to make the decision with my family about whether I can afford to buy my way out of jail. So I think in a significant amount of circumstances, It is the person's money that has the full discretion on whether the person is going to be in or out. You know, and I think that's, you know, you've heard from the state's attorney that that's kind of the way the federal system does it to an extent. And we see the federal system, you know, really dealing with the highest cases with the highest importance and able to do that in a very clean way. You know, I think to the New Jersey point, it is, I will say, a bit ironic. You know, as somebody that's been working on this bill since 2017, someone who has talked to a number of people in New Jersey and beyond, brought them to Chicago for a very long time. It was advocates that were fighting for a New Jersey-like model and folks saying that it couldn't be done, that the New Jersey model couldn't be done. Now we see folks kind of jumping on to the Jersey model. But with that said, I think the state's attorney is right. It did pass via referendum in New Jersey. That's mm-hmm. not happening here. But in terms of it taking time, please remember that we have taken 2 years. This bill was passed 2 years ago, and that was intentional to yeah. give the legislator, give the authorities the time to kind of figure things out.
And sure. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but speaking of taking the time, we need to take a break, a mandatory break on this show. We're going to continue this conversation when we return. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the changes to Illinois law known collectively as the Safety Act that was signed into law last year by Governor J.B. Pritzker. That stands for Safety, Accountability, Fairness, and Equity Today. Among other things, the law ends the system of money bond, cash bail. It also has training changes for police officers. It's going to be police departments are going to be required to get body cameras across the state if they don't already have them within the next few years. We're talking about all this because it's really become a hot political issue. There have been viral memes making the round. This has been the subject of campaign messages in mailers and television ads and interviews. And we're talking about this with Gary Gatewood, who's executive director of the Illinois Justice Project, Sharon Mitchell, chief public defender for Cook County, and Jay Hanley, the state's attorney in Winnebago County. Mitchell and Gatewood are backers of the legislation. State's attorney Hanley has expressed some concerns about aspects of it, most notably in an op-ed that was published in the Rockford Register-Star. We will have a link to that at our website, 21stshow.org, if you want to take a look at some of that. We'll also have a link to, as Gary Gatewood mentioned, there's a breakdown of the law on the Illinois Justice Project website. Again, you can check that out at 21stshow.org. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. And I want to go now to Christine in Quincy, who is calling on line four. Christine, thank you for holding and joining our conversation today.
Hi, Brian. I'm so happy that you're talking regarding this subject today. In regards to Bailey saying that property tax will be heightened, from experience, I know once you're sentenced or you're found not guilty, the majority of your bond is returned to you. So I'm not sure how it affects property tax. Furthermore, I'd like to say from experience, I have a nonviolent drug conviction. I was fortunate to be able to bond out, which allowed me to be proactive in my recovery, which I was in turn avoided a prison sentence. I'd also like to give a shout out to the land of Lincoln for sealing my record so that I could become gainfully employed and become a contributor to our state rather than a dependent of our state. And just want to say thank you.
That's Land of Lincoln Legal Aid. And thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate that, Christine. Thank you for calling in. I don't know, maybe State's Attorney Hanley, do you want to take that question? I mean, we did have that clip of Republican gubernatorial nominee Darren Bailey, in case people are just tuning in, they missed it. He was on a radio interview and he thought that property taxes would go up to make up for what he was saying, I guess, is a loss of money coming in from money bond. We don't have to spend a long time on that, but that's not actually what happens with the money from bond, right?
Yeah. So first, Christine, congrats on your recovery. That's great news, and I'm happy for you. In terms of, I don't know that I can speak necessarily to property taxes. I can say it's put a tremendous amount of budgetary pressure on Winnebago County. To put it on a finer point, we don't know how we're going to pay for this. We're going to have Saturday court. I'm going to have to hire additional attorneys. There is no kind of money coming in from the state. So Winnebago County is going to have to figure it out. And lots of counties in Illinois are in the same boat. There's also another thing that's probably not being talked about enough. And what they did in New Jersey is they actually provided some, they funded their pretrial services report. The reality is more people are going to be getting out of jail pretrial, and that's fine, but they're supposed to have pretrial conditions and be monitored. Well, that requires funding too. And there currently aren't enough, nor enough resources to actually adequately supervise those who are released pretrial. So it is going to have a financial impact on the state of Illinois and particularly counties, and a negative impact at that.
Gary Gatewood, go ahead, please.
Quickly on that, and I'll let you go, Sharon. So on the pretrial reports, I'm sure State's Attorney Hanley knows that the Administrative Office of Illinois Courts has launched a pretrial services office that is working on hiring upwards of 300 pretrial service officers to work in counties to offer support there. That is being funded through the Administrative Office of Illinois Courts, so that should alleviate some of the pressure and stress that you talked about there. I just wanted to point that out, and I'll go ahead and let you go, Sharon. My apologies for interrupting.
No, I just want to say I agree in part with Attorney Hanley that there are things that that counties will have to do to help support this law. We will need significantly more support for public defenders. We know that public defenders across the state are not well funded. In a place like Cook County that's bigger, even we have difficulty in terms of bringing in public defenders. And I would imagine, I actually know that the situation is far worse off in many of the counties across the state. So I would encourage the legislator, as we're thinking about continuing to have conversations about implementation, to think about how we're funding not only prosecutors, but also public defenders as well. To the second point on the economics piece, I do think that we have to think about this in terms of economics, in terms of the counties, but also economics in terms of the individual. I was having a conversation with a young woman last night who was there to bail her son out of Cook County Jail. She worked in healthcare, and she talked about the $1,000 that she had to come up with to bond her son out was kind of like the last amount of money that she had. And she didn't know what she was going to do to replace that money. So as we talk about the funding of governments, I think we also need to talk about the millions and millions of dollars that we're pulling out of communities for people that are likely going to be released anyway. And even though that money does tend to come back to people, there is real economic harm when you hold that money up for 6 months, a year, 2 years, and three. And it's one of the benefits of ending cash bond.
We'll say more about that. Sharon Mitchell, about, I mean, your clients or your, the attorneys you work with, their clients, what does this mean for them and their families?
Well, listen, I think that, this bill is balanced, right? On one hand, we believe that, individuals families will be able to keep millions and millions of dollars in their pockets, right? And that millions and million dollars help to keep families whole, help make people make better decisions that are not based on desperation. But on the other hand, this is a world in which if you are accused of a serious crime, you can't buy your way out of jail, right? So there are going to be some real tough decisions that need to be made, and some of those decisions will be made to the benefit of our clients. Other of those decisions will be made to the great detriment of our clients.
Gary Gatewood, let me ask you about, I mentioned that there was a comment from a Republican official. There was a briefing for reporters last week. We were asked not to use names, we agreed not to use names. So I'll just say a Republican office holder in Illinois described the law as pro-criminal and anti-police. Can you respond to that characterization? Because I think that is certainly one of the big messages we're seeing from the Republican side of the aisle, at least in Illinois.
Yeah, I think that's wholly incorrect. And I think And again, not knowing who it was and, you know, just not even caring about party lines, I think that's a remarkably dangerous comment to make. Pro-criminal for people who have been accused of crimes has several undertones to it that shouldn't be used, first and foremost. Second, anti-police is a sentiment that people use often when they don't have answers. Police were a part of the negotiations for the Safety Act. Police were a part of the negotiations for the trailer bills. Law enforcement just received an additional $250 million from the General Assembly this past session. So I haven't seen anything in this piece that is anti-police or pro-criminal or pro-folks who have been accused of crimes. So when we use rhetoric like that, you know, we have to hold folks accountable, and folks need to be careful with the kind of language that they use, because that language has an impact. So we need to be thoughtful about that. And when you make comments like that, people need to be accountable for what they say. So that would be my initial thoughts, right? Showing us how it's pro, quote unquote, criminal, and how it's anti-police, because when you make a blanketed statement like that, you should be held accountable for it and actually be able to show it by not using some of the things that we've seen through fear-mongering.
State's Attorney Hanley, what's your perspective on that? Do you think that that's an accurate characterization of the law?
No, but I think it's fair to say that most of the police officers that I know don't support the act. They may have been at the negotiating table, but they didn't support the act, and they're not very happy about the provisions within it. They're not happy about some of the issues with respect to warrants with the new law. And so, you know, again, could I point to all the specifics and exactly what the Sheriff's Association's issues are, the police chief's issues are? No. But I can tell you anecdotally that not many police officers I know view this bill as being a positive thing for their communities. So there's that. Again, that's anecdotal.
Sure. Well, from a state's attorney, then you're a state's attorney. What, in your perspective, and you acknowledge this is a supermajority Democratic state, right? It's the, you know, cash bond is not likely to come back. But what about the law could be changed in your view?
Sure. So I think the number one thing is there are currently categories of crimes which a person cannot be detained based upon their dangerous to the community. They can only be detained if they're going to be a high likelihood of willful flight. And so we need to widen the eligibility net for those that can be detained. And that's what I mean by returning the discretion back to the judges. If there's there's entire categories of crimes that they can't consider detaining someone pretrial based upon dangerousness, you are severely limiting their discretion. And so again, widen the eligibility net. Secondly, the idea that a judge can't issue a bench warrant when someone doesn't show up to court, I think is ridiculous. That we have to issue a rule to show cause, go serve that person a second notice, essentially an invitation to come back to court, and then only then can they be served or served with a bench warrant. I think that's problematic for a lot of different reasons. I understand the person who has to work and therefore they're not at court, but that's not happening in our county. The warrants aren't getting issued in those circumstances. And it's not happening in most of the counties, if not all of them in Illinois. So that's a very severe problem that's got to be fixed. The last thing is the legislature didn't tell us whether it's prospective or retroactive. And that is a huge issue. Various counties are saying that it's prospective, and then various counties are saying it's retroactive. And I know that's kind of lawyer speak, but it matters. And so they have to fix that. And the reality is, even if they fix it in this session, it's going to be too late. The confusion and damage has already been done, and they could have very simply let us know how it should be applied.
And that's prospective meaning only to cases going forward, retrospective meaning to existing cases that are already in the system.
Correct.
Yeah. Sharon Mitchell, do you want to respond to any of State's Attorney Hanley's concerns there?
Yeah, so, you know, I agree with State's Attorney Hanley that it would, you know, and I hope that in the cleanup language we get an answer on that issue. I think that counties have made their interpretations, and, you know, oftentimes judges interpret laws. So it's not the first time this has happened where a judge has to interpret a law. But I think that he's 100% right that coming back to the table and kind of answering that question is really important. To the second point about warrants, that just simply isn't my read of the legislation. And this just may be a point that needs to be clarified, but you know, I've read the legislation and I believe that it was the framers' intent to offer judges the availability of issuing a rule to show cause, not requiring that a rule to show cause be issued before a warrant. You know, it was, you know, one of the, you know, the Supreme Court Commission on Pretrial Practices got together and issued a report in April of 2020. This was a group of 32 folks. I believe about 24 had either current or former experience in prosecuting cases, being on the bench or being in law enforcement, and the kind of the option to give the judge the ability to issue a rule to show cause in a case where you know that the person may have missed court because of, you know, they had to work or they had childcare issues, in changing the law where there's a requirement that a warrant must be issued, I believe was the kind of the thought on that. On the first issue, you know, definitely understand where the state's attorney is coming. I do think that we need to understand that what could happen if you open up incarceration to every case, small cases, you know, simple cases, is that you're going to get a lot of people stuck in the jail system and with no way to get out. They won't be able to bond out. That's going to increase jail populations, it's going to increase the prison populations, and it's going to create a lot of danger for the community. You know, we had go ahead.
Sharone, first of all, that's not what happened in New Jersey, first of all. The research shows that their jail population did go down and that they found that those who are currently incarcerated pretrial are actually their most violent offenders. It actually worked. And so I don't, by opening the eligibility net, I disagree with you wholeheartedly. In addition, we're not talking about class A's and class 4's. I'm talking about aggravated battery, robbery, burglary, hate crimes, aggravated DUIs, vehicular homicide, drug-induced homicides, all drug offenses, including class X's, are not eligible to be detained based upon dangerousness. And that is problematic and eliminates discretion from the prosecutors and judges.
Well, like your own mission, and I just have to warn you, we only have about a minute left in our conversation.
Yeah, just very quickly, the current system doesn't give judges that ability when you give people cash bonds. They have the decision about whether they're going to bond out or not. In terms of New Jersey, we've seen a detention rate of about 6.5%, but we've also seen a significant increase in racial disparities based upon that system. And it's important to note that the Supreme Court Commission, no advocates on the actual commission, actually advocated for a detention net, right? These are judges, these are prosecutors, these are law enforcement officials. They looked at the New Jersey model and they decided that it was important for this state to have a detention net. That doesn't come from advocates, that doesn't come from public defenders, that comes from a commission filled with prosecutors, police officers, and court system actors.
And that is going to have to be the last word in our conversation on this for now. I'm sure this is a topic we will revisit in the future. Sharone Mitchell, Garen Gatewood, and Jay Hanley, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your perspectives today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Sharone Mitchell is Chief Public Defender of Cook County. Jay Hanley is the Winnebago County State's Attorney. And Garen Gatewood is Executive Director of the Illinois Justice Project. Coming up after a short break, we're going to be talking about Puerto Rico, the diaspora, the people of Puerto Rico. There are more people actually living off island than on it. And they are mobilizing to support the people back on the island in the wake of another devastating natural disaster that has left many, many people there without power and water. That conversation after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.